Quinn was a man not easily pleased. He'd turned down Seurat's and Van Hoch's that European rivals had coveted. He had passed up countless Braques and Matisse's, preferring to wait for better ones. At times, he'd rejected Picasso's that the artist himself had offered him. Sometimes he'd sent paintings back that he found wanting. Up until the moment he saw it, his friends in Paris were worried about this one, too. They needn't have been. "The painting sings, every part of it, and the whole of it is perfect," he wrote the next morning. Called The Sleeping Gypsy, the painting was by Henri Rousseau, the French customs official and self-taught artist who had died in 1910. Though he remained little known to the general public, he was a lodestar to Picasso and other avant-garde painters, who befriended him at the end of his life. Quinn had long been fascinated by Rousseau's unworldly genius. He also knew that his paintings were widely scattered. Years earlier, he had set out to acquire a work of Rousseau's that stood out above all the others. He was convinced that such a picture existed, but none of the Rousseau's he saw measured up. Until Picasso found him The Woman and the Lion. For Quinn, the painting's arrival in his apartment was the climax of a career as a cultural renegade, a life lived through the most daring art and literature of his time. Though he seldom traveled to Europe, Quinn had made friends with and personally supported an improbable number of the artists and writers who would go on to define modernism, picking them out on his own judgment because they excited him. Joseph Conrad and Henri Matisse, Ezra Pound and Pablo Picasso. He had followed them through the war, sent them letters and money, visited their studios and flats, worried about their health. Even as he struggled to keep up with his law practice, as his own health declined and he ran out of funds, he always found time for what he adamantly referred to as living art. The paintings and sculptures that moved him most were not just objects of uncommon beauty. They had to give off radium, he told his friends, the energizing rays of life itself. Nor had he been content to keep his enthusiasms private. At a time when modern art remained deeply suspect to most Americans, Quinn aggressively promoted avant-garde painting and modernist prose. He introduced Americans to the poetry of W.B. Yeats and T.S. Eliot, to Romanian sculptor Constantin Brancusi's Mademoiselle Pogagne, and to French artist Marcel Duchamp's Nude Descending a Staircase. He defended taboo-breaking novels in court and lobbied Congress to end a punitive import tax on contemporary art. The best new work, he argued, was inseparable from social progress, and introducing it to a broad public would bring American civilization to the forefront of the modern world. 6 years earlier, at the end of the war, he had embarked on an even more ambitious project, to gather together the very best works by the small group of artists who, in his estimation, were changing history. With these unheralded masterpieces, he was going to build the first great modern art collection in the United States. And he was going to transform the way Americans thought about art. With his Picassos, and now the big Rousseau painting, he seemed, at last, to be bringing that project to fruition. As they stood admiring Quinn's greatest prize, however, Jean Foster knew how distant his ambition still was. Her work as a journalist and critic had given her few illusions about American culture. Modest and self-effacing, despite her exceptional strength of mind, she made a striking counterpoint to Quinn's cocksure brilliance. She shared many of the lawyer's remarkable qualities, including humble origins, an elite education, and an insatiable curiosity that bridled against prevailing taste and social convention.